Very happy to be back. So we had a little bit of a lengthy episode about Bhishma, and I think seeing Bhishma's status, it
lifespan.
Yeah. Somebody with such a long lifespan, so the episode was a bit long. I hope the listeners didn't mind. Please tell us what do you think about the duration. We will try to accommodate your request as much as possible. So now we go from text 13 till text 19, where we just see the martial music being conducted. There is not much of a philosophical point. There is one big philosophical point which we shall take. So text 13 goes like this. Text 13, first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Tata shankhascha bheryascha panavanaka go mukhah sahasaivyabhyahanyanta sashabdastumulo bhavat. After that means after Bhishma Dev blew his conch shell, after that the conch shell, drums, bugles, trumpets and horns were all suddenly sounded and the combined sound was tumultuous. Tata shvetair hayer yukte mahati syandane sitau madhava pandavaschaiva divyo shankho pradatmatu. On the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. So the conch shell blown by Bhishma Dev and the conch shells blown by Krishna and Arjuna, very, very clearly they are described in different ways. The one in the hands of Bhishma Dev is said to be tumultuous sound making, just a loud sound generator. But in the hands of Krishna and Arjuna, it is transcendental. Divyam Shankham. So, is there any significance in that? Yes. The sounding of the Divya Shankha, transcendental conch shells, indicates there is no hope of victory for the other side. Jayastu Pandu Putranam Yesham Pakshe Janardhanaha. So in one sense, the Gita is telling the reader that, hey friend, look at this. The conch shells are just loud sound making. Here they are transcendental. Where there is Krishna, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, who is like the symbol of victory, she also is there. So victory and fortune are on Arjuna's side. The chariot on which both the friends were seated, the story goes that the chariot was given by Agni Dev to Arjuna. And it was a Dig Vijayi chariot. Dig means the directions and Vijay means able to conquer. So wherever it was drawn, any part of the world, this chariot will always be victorious. So in one sense, Krishna and his devotee, Arjuna, they are equal. Like sometimes we say, how can God and the living entity be equal? Here is a hint. They are on the same platform, Madhava, Pandava, blowing their conch shells. But this is not an ordinary thing. Arjuna, as Krishna's associate, is equally powerful. And the reasoning is given, nobody can be a close friend or a relation of Krishna without being very, very advanced. Like fire can mix with fire. Water can mix with water. Similarly, unless somebody is transcendentally advanced, they cannot mix with Krishna. So Krishna brings his own paraphernalia with him. I have a very mundane kind of example. So this was my college days or maybe pre-college days. And for the first time, a world table tennis championship was organized in Delhi. At that time, Scandinavia was quite a powerful nation in table tennis. So the Danish team, the Dutch team, they came and they had a frightening experience of India's water. So it was the summer season. So they brought 700 liters of water with them for the entire 14-day or 15-day period. And of course, that time I was not reading Bhagavad Gita. Now, when I heard that when Krishna descends, he brings his own paraphernalia with him, his own relations, his own opulence, his own power, prowess, potency, everything. So I was thinking, just like these people, they are in India, but they don't drink even Indian water. They brought whatever they want with them. Similarly, Krishna brings whatever he wants with them. And anything, like here Prabhupada is giving the understanding that if you see something is on equal footing with Krishna, like Krishna and Arjuna on the same chariot, blowing similar conch shells, but they are both described as divyam, transcendental. Anything you would like to share on this?
Not exactly. You have covered it, Prabhuji. We can go ahead.
Okay. So then the list of conch shells now continues. Text 15. Panchajanyam Rishikesho Devadattam Dhananjayaha Paundram Dadmo Mahashankam Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha. Translation. Lord Krishna blew his conch shell called Panchajanya. Arjun blew his, the Devadatta. And Bhima, the voracious eater and performer of Herculean tasks, blew his terrific conch shell called Paundra. So here, Krishna's names are kind of that importance about Krishna's name called Rishikesh. Rishika means our sense organs. And Rishikesh is the Lord, the proprietor, or the controller of the senses. So, it's a bit of a technical point which Prabhupada explains here. Living beings are considered to be part of God. So, the part of the living entity are also part of God's senses. I'll give a simple example. Like a collector of a province has a bungalow, has a vehicle. So the collector is the temporary proprietor of this government property. So right now the collector has the decision to take his vehicle here, there, whatever. But he cannot sell his bungalow, right?
Correct.
He cannot sell his car, cannot sell his jeep. So in one sense, the jeep or the bungalow is part of the property of the collector, but the collector as well as his property is property of the government. And the government has hundreds such bungalows and hundreds of such officers and tens of hundreds of such vehicles and servants and everything. A very basic mundane example. So this is how philosophically the Gita tells us that Krishna is actually the owner and controller of everything. Now, here in India, we have a different way of seeing spirituality where the impersonal aspect of God is stressed over the personal aspect. So, according to the impersonal theory, the senses of the living entities are unimportant because they are nothing. They are there for some time and then they vanish. So, becoming senseless as you become mukta or moksha prapti, that is the goal. It's like when you are pure, you don't have senses. Now you are impure, so you have some senses. And when with tapasya, knowledge, charity, and whatnot, full spirituality, and your end point is no senses again. Now, there are people who adhere to this understanding and they are all great tapasvis and gyanis in their own right. But Prabhupada brings up a small point here. How can you account for the Lord's senses then? Why he has ears, why he has a tongue, why he sings, dances, and does all kinds of sensual activities? That means Krishna's senses are actually eternal. Our senses give us problems because we don't use them in Krishna's service properly. How are my eyes, my ears, and my nose, how is it being directed? Right now, if I say, like it's so easy to say that God made me do it. It's murder, theft, any immoral act, God made me do it. Oh, good. So if you say that, like a soldier is given a AK-47, so this is given to me by the army, and I can use it to kill, right? No, you can't use it to kill anybody and everybody. Every single bullet which you fire, when there is no order, you'll be court-martialed for that.
Correct.
So this is such a pivotally important principle that the senses are given for a particular activity. It's like the army. Right now, if you go to army barracks, and if you say, why don't you shoot? Hey, there are no orders, man. And when the orders are given, fire. After some time, if the enemy fire becomes acute, fire at will. Keep on firing. Keep on firing. And the same walkie-talkie may relay, cease fire. Cease fire. And that moment is noted. 5:03, cease fire orders were given. And why did you fire at 5:05 p.m.? Give an explanation. Whether you received it or you didn't receive it or what. So much of care is taken for just a mundane military in just one country. This is how we can understand that the senses have to be used and according to the dictation of the controller of the senses. So I'll just name one point and then you can elaborate on that if you have anything. So Krishna's names are given. Actually, Krishna doesn't have a name like you and me have a name. In fact, we don't have a name. We just have a label. Somebody's Amar. That doesn't mean he's Amar. Somebody's Ashok. But he's lamenting. He said, hey, your name is Ashok and why are you lamenting? Well, her name is Lakshmi, but she's a housemaid somewhere. So this is this material world. But when Krishna is called Devaki Nandan, oh, because he accepted Devaki as his mother, Yashoda Nandan. His childhood pastimes were given to Yashoda, Parth Sarthi, because he is a charioteer of his friend Parth. Similarly, Rishikesh means the inner secret meaning is he is now giving direction to Arjun on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Wait, not yet. Arjuna has not fulfilled his role as a disciple yet. So we'll be meeting Arjuna the disciple in 2.7. Later, second chapter. Right now, at least, the significance of Krishna's name is to be understood by our audience. So friends, if this fundamental concept is clear, that Krishna is always in control, but he directs his control according to the receptive capacity of the living being. For somebody who doesn't want to cooperate, Krishna doesn't force cooperation. Like government doesn't force you to take a particular job. But if you behave in an antisocial way, they may take away your whatever freedom
Correct.
Which was available. They may take away that also. Yes, Prabhu. Anything else?
No, I mean, I'm just munching on two very beautiful points that you highlighted. One was about the names and the tags. Never thought like that. Actually, only Krishna has names. We have got labels. As you said, Ashoka doesn't mean it doesn't have Shoka. You know, he laments a very beautiful point. And that too, you know, we are given these tags after a few days of our birth. When we are born, we don't have any label also. That was a very beautiful point. And second point is about this whole, how Krishna is actually the control of our senses. And you give a wonderful example of how military, you know, no soldier can fire a bullet. He's accounted for that. And similarly, we are accounted how to use it. So you made a point that how, according to Bhagavad Gita's wisdom, Krishna is a controller of everything that we have. And that's why he is mentioned as Rishikesha, the master of the senses. So yes, Roshi, we can go ahead.
Yeah, so then other warriors who are having their beautiful as well as their previously, I don't think today any soldier calls his AK-47 as Vidyulata or something like that. But every bow arrow would be having name.
Oh,
so
yeah,
text 16 and 18. Yudhishthir blew his conch shell, Ananta Vijay. Nakul Sahadev, Sughosh Mani Pushpak. The king of Kashi, he also blew. The great fighter Shikhandi. Shikhandi, by the way, is Amba, reincarnated as a male and will be playing a role in Bhishma Deva's defeat. Then Drishtadyumna, Virat, Satyaki, Drupad, the sons of Draupadi, and others, such as the mighty armed son of Subhadra. Here comes our Abhimanyu. They all blew their respective conch shells. And now 19, here is something very significant. The blowing of these different conch shells became uproarious. It's like, paw, 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 and so much vibrating both in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Very significant point. The noise made by Kaurava party is described as very loud, tumultuous. But the sound made by the conch shells of the Pandava party, it is described as shattering the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Why it should be like that? Because we saw one party has material sound, the other has spiritual sound.
Mm.
And Prabhupada gives a very significant answer here. The Pandavas were less in number, not very prepared for fight. But they had their confidence in Lord Krishna. So this is the resounding message in the Ramayana, Mahabharata, Puranic literature. One who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord has nothing to fear, even in the midst of the greatest calamity. So, this confidence, which Prabhupada describes here, is called Sharanagati. It has the components that, like a small child, Prabhupada talks of a story. He was with his son, 2.5 years old. And the tram conductor said, "Give me your fare." So Prabhupada's son said, "I don't have any money. I don't have any money." And he said, "Oh, you don't have any money? Get down." Immediately the son pointed to his father and said, "My father's here. You cannot ask me to get down." Such a simple everyday episode. And Prabhupada compares that with a person taking shelter of God, that Maya, you can't do anything to me. My father's here. So if anyone approaches Krishna, the guarantee is through the Gita and the Mahabharata, if you have approached Krishna, even the greatest fear will not agitate you. Mm-hmm. Like today, how many books, how many therapies, how many tips, how to get rid of fear, how to get rid of fear. But here is a simple thing for a devotee. You can't do anything to me, Maya. Krishna is here. Like the son telling, "My father is here. You cannot challenge me." Very simple and very sublime at the same time.
I mean, nothing for me to add here. I was just kind of wondering that today is the whole economy, the whole the environment is surcharged with fear. Everything is sold on the basis of fear. And here, in the very introductory pages of Bhagavad Gita, we're just kind of setting the scene. Such a profound message is given, which you just spoke about. You know, just like a son having the faith, the father will protect, and he's fearless. Yeah. So the whole world, everyone is so much perturbed by this fear. You know, what calamity, what crisis would happen here and there? People are worried about it. And we have not yet even started the philosophical discussion. Right in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, the solution to the world's greatest problem today that people have is mentioned in such a simple word. Prabhupada says, well, Pandavas had nothing to fear about because they had taken shelter of the Supreme Lord. And you made a very beautiful point quoting that, how the son takes shelter of father, he has nothing to fear. And it's an everyday experience, we all have it. It's only we can't relate it, our everyday experience with our eternal father. Very, very nice report. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for that.
So that's all for today. We'll again meet next time where we will be seeing Arjuna speaking now. He has come to the understanding that fighting is about to begin. He has not surrendered yet. He has not started to fight yet. In fact, this is the beginning of the spiraling downwards into such despair. So that's like the mud. And through that, later, the lotus of the philosophy will be growing. So please stay tuned. Till we meet again next time. Thank you all for listening. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, everyone.